Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Kat Knapsack for another edition of the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, the supremacy of our First Order Armada. Here we are to discuss, oh yeah, we got some book reviews coming. I'm excited for this episode. Thanks for all your support out there. Hope you all enjoyed the myth versus history episode last time out. And we have our normal cast of characters, Joseph Scrimshaw's here, Jennifer Landa's here. Joseph, how are you?
Good. I haven't been called normal in a long time, so that's very nice.
Well,
I know what you meant.
Yeah.
I wasn't offended that you called me normal.
Yeah, no. Trust me. You're not, I'm not. And Jennifer, you're the most normal of us here, I think.
Hello.
Not no more, Billy.
That's my Amelin Holdo voice. Hi, I'm talking like this.
Can't wait for the movie to come out and the databank brawl where you will play Holdo for sure.
I don't think you're far off.
Right?
That's a good Laura Dern.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Kind of amazing.
Throw in some some space Luna Lovegood.
Exactly.
And you're all right.
We'll get deep into that.
You're all right. My. Man, it's good to have you guys back. Love talking Star Wars with you two. It's a Four Center Way is what we got to hear. And as always, we also have some Star Wars adventures. You guys get to hear mine. Spotlight Star Wars. I bought this damn Kylo Ren that I didn't want. It's my fourth different Kylo Ren Black series, but I had to have it.
Absolutely, you had to.
Yeah.
You made the right choice.
Did, right?
Look at how happy he looks on your shelf.
He looks so brooding, and that scar is moving.
But he's happy to be here.
Very happy to be here. So that was my recent Star Wars adventure. You can hear the whole Spotlight Star Wars this past weekend for more of that. But speaking of figures, Joseph, you had a figure adventure.
I did, and I just wanted to share it on Force Center because it was so perfect. I think I have rambled about it before, right. But this was like the end of the story in a way, or the circle completing. So I found a Luke Skywalker, a Last Jedi, 3 3/4 Kenner, ooh, just straightforward. I mean, I got the Black Series already at San Diego Comic-Con, but I wanted that Luke Skywalker. And I knew, like, I can get him. I can buy him on the internet right now.
Right.
Or maybe somebody will come across him and send him to me, like sometimes people nicely do. Or maybe my wife will find him. But what I really, really wanted is exactly what happened, is to have that recreation of my childhood where I just turned the corner.
Yeah.
And he's hanging there. And it goes all the way back to Return of the Jedi, because I'm so very old. Where I lived in St. Cloud, outside of Minneapolis. I was driving to Minneapolis. It was an hour drive, and it was like before the movie had come out. And every time we went to Minneapolis, I was like, I think the Jedi figures are going to be there, and I'm going to see Luke is a Jedi Knight. My brother would go, no, it's not going to happen. Just, he would break me down and try to take away my hope because he didn't want me to be disappointed.
Aww. Toy collections are built on hope.
Exactly. And I was like, I think it's going to happen this time.
Yeah.
Who do you want? And he's like, I don't know, Gamorrean guard. So I turn the corner, you know, in 1983, and there is Jedi Luke, and I get him, and I get my brother, Gamorrean guard.
Your brother did not come out on the short end of the stick.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's a very heavy figure. But yeah, my wife and I, we had such a wonderful, weird, we don't have normal Saturdays. We went to IKEA to buy bookshelves so I can have more places to have action figures. Oh, and it's like, let's just stop at this Target real quick, just in case. This story is running in my mind from 1983.
Good Target.
Wow. Yeah, it is. And you know the Target I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's got Empire in the name of the mall. So it was perfect. So it was just perfect. I just turned the corner. Not only was it was Luke hanging. I didn't even have to dig. He was just right there. Right in the center, just hanging there. And I've wanted that since the second that the Lucasfilm sale was announced. That was my first thought.
Yeah, well, I remember you saying that.
There's going to be a new Luke Skywalker figure from a new movie.
Right.
Mm. And it was just bliss.
Wow. I love it. And yeah, I love that you posted a nice picture. We got to experience it. And because you really love that 3 3/4, that's your jam. Mm-hmm.
And this line is the best they've had in years.
There's
no bullshit. There's no like, oh, you get a part of Snoke's knee and then his head and you put them together. And it doesn't come with a big dumb cannon that's not canon. That is not an actual Star Wars weapon. It's just, they're so good. And they also had a Chewie with a Porg. He just comes with a Porg.
That's a good Target.
Little Porg, General Hux has a mouse droid. It's such a just clean, beautiful line. There's no extra bullshit.
I might have to pick up a couple of them for displays. Yeah, because you guys know I love the Black Series stuff. I just love it. But I, there's something. You're right. I think it is. It's a good line. Because the other ones, I'd be like, oh, a gin or so with rocket pack.
Yeah, like and who cares? Yeah. Gravity boots. What the?
Yeah. Poe Dameron with helicopter. Like,
who cares?
Well, that's great. That's a heartwarming Star Wars story.
Yeah. And Sarah, my wife, started taking pictures. I didn't ask.
Yeah.
I just picked it up and I was just like, oh. And her phone was out because she knew.
Yeah. She knew.
She knew to capture the moment.
She captured the moment well. Jennifer, how's your daughter and Porgs doing?
She's loving him. She's playing with a little Porg that we got her from Force Friday.
Yeah.
She sleeps with him.
Yeah.
And he's our favorite. He's our favorite little guy.
Wow. And what I love is you don't really force this stuff.
No.
No pun intended. It just happens.
It does. We have all the Star Wars books, and obviously she's watched Forces of Destiny, and we have all the figures, and so she's playing with her little Ewok daily. Leia, taking off Leia's boots today.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Playing with her Ewok daily is such a beautiful sentence.
Yeah, she wanted to take her Ewok with us yesterday, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're at the point where she wants to take her toy with us. It's a Star Wars toy with us.
I might need myself a Porg pillow.
Yeah, there's a lot of Porgs out there, a lot of different sizes. Some of them make horrific noises.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that they do. But I feel I need to clarify this. I am so on board for the Porgs. I know there's this, I started the eating them thing. I didn't start it, but I'm definitely perpetuated it. I still love the Porgs. I really think they belong in Star Wars. So
good.
unless 8 shows up and they do something completely weird where they play with a lightsaber and kill a stormtrooper or something. I don't know. But I'm, jury's still out. But I love it.
As long as a porg doesn't fly through the air and crap on somebody's head.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
As long as they're not wacky.
Yosa.
Yeah. Oh, wacky early.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, when we were talking about Colin Trevorrow, the directing controversy, JJ joining, we did, Joseph, we put out a pitch question for episode 9, right?
Yeah, we were talking about how the story is still really wide open to be determined. And I think we threw out some random ideas of things we'd like, and we got excited and said, hey, if anybody out there has a pitch, send it in. And I posted on our Facebook page, which everybody should go listen to. We got to 1,000 views. Ooh, or not 1,000 views. What are words? 1,000 likes. So go like us on Facebook. And we got this great episode 9 pitch from Kyler Mark Allred. Nice. Shall I read?
Let's do it.
Excellent. He has titled episode 9, Star Wars, : Enigma of the Porgs.
Yes.
See it again for the first time.
Once Rey found out that the once cute and cuddly Porgs were controlling Snoke all along, she has to team up with Finn, Rose, Poe, and BB-8 to find a mysterious journal that will help them take out the Porgs once and for all. When they discover the journal, Rey has to take it back to Luke to uncover the secrets, and they discover it was written by none other than Jedi Master Yarel Poof. With the wisdom of Master Poof and the powers of Rey and Luke combined, they're able to destroy the one true evil once and for all. As the last Porg dies, the Force is now truly balanced, and our heroes live happy ever after. Or do they? Bum, bum, bum.
Love it.
Beautiful, beautiful work. This is Kyler Mark Allred.
Yeah, Kyler, it's a very almost Trouble with Tribbles type of approach to this, the Trouble with Porgs here. I love it.
Yeah. I immediately imagine actually Brian Ward, who's an awesome artist.
Yeah.
Do you remember that rendition that he did of like Snoke with the Porgs?
With the Porgs?
Filled with the Porgs.
Oh, yeah, yes.
With the Porgs standing on top of each other.
Pork-filled Snoke.
Exactly.
2 years ago, 2 months ago, I would have believed that that was a dish you could eat. Pork-filled Snoke.
Pork-filled Snoke.
Tasty.
Awesome. Kyler, thank you so much for that pitch. We love it. You guys, if you still have episode 9 pitches, send them in. Maybe we'll read more. We got a long way to go to episode 9. We can still pitch the story. Maybe they're listening. Maybe Lucasfilm will take our ideas. Lucasfilm is in the news as always, as they should be. One of the biggest producers of films that we love. So, Jennifer, we have news to catch up on.
Oh, yes, we do. It's not a trap. It's a wrap on episode 8, The Last Jedi.
Memories of Maude Garrett. It's a wrap.
Director Rian Johnson shared on social media that post-production on the film is finished. He posted an Instagram photo of himself and his post-production team with a caption, quote, "And that's a wrap on the hardest working post-production team in the galaxy, going to miss sitting in dark rooms with these goobers," end quote. So now that the film is in the can, I'm sure that somebody commented on the photo, when are we getting the trailer? Do you think that the fact that they just now, you know, picture locked that it's that they're going to release a trailer, is that why they haven't released a trailer? Nothing to do with it.
I mean, Hamill, this whole the sub story here is that Hamill, God bless him, on the day of this recording, it's his birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Kind of said it's coming on Monday Night Football on the 9th, right?
I believe so. Yeah. October,
I think somebody else had an inkling towards that, and then he tweeted something about it and then deleted it. So, I mean,
October 9th.
I mean, it happens.
Only heads more creepy.
For all we know, he was directed to do that.
Yeah.
So, to lead people off the scent.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, I think the two big newsworthy things about this is that the trailer is going to be accurate, regardless of when it comes out. There won't be any shots that are like, wait a minute, where did that shot go?
Mm-hmm. I see what you did there.
It is complete.
Right. Yeah. That's what I thought of.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, this is so great for what Lucasfilm needs right now for. It's smooth. There was no problem. It's sort of like, wait a minute, what do you mean the movie's done?
Yeah.
It doesn't come out for a few weeks yet.
Right.
How can it be done? There were no problems.
No problems.
Go back and make a problem, Rian Johnson.
No massive reshoots, everything. Yeah.
Nope.
Which also just proves all the stuff that, hey, Ryan's run a good, tight ship that everyone's happy with. As far as the trailer, I mean, I'm good with this Monday Night Football. I mean, I remember Force Awakens. I remember staying late at the old Screen Junkies office with Hal Rudnick to wait for it to drop. That would make perfect sense. right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I just hope that they do trailer drop and opening of tickets separately, because that was a pain.
Oh, that was crazy.
Was that was tied together, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. The same night. So it was, yes. I had the choice. Everything was like blocked on the internet for tickets, and I had the choice of like, I can walk to the theater near my home and physically buy the tickets or see the trailer.
Right.
And once again, my wife rescued me. I was like, I'll go see it. Like, because the trailer will still be there, right?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We need to see it when it comes on.
No, the anxiety is real. I keep getting emails from Fandango, and every time I'm like, is this it? Is this the Star Wars tickets? Have they already gone on sale and I missed it? So,
yeah.
I think we'll be getting it very soon.
I think so.
Yeah. So there is a little bit of drama. If you do want some drama.
I do.
Although I don't know how much drama, you know, you never know with this kind of stuff. So Hollywood Reporter recently ran a salacious article about how J.J. Abrams, quote, jilted Paramount for episode 9. Apparently, JJ has had a $10 million development deal with Paramount since 2006. And after he was tied up with The Force Awakens in 2013, Paramount had hoped that JJ would make some more hit films for them before his deal with Paramount expires in 2018. But since JJ will now be occupied with Star Wars for the next 2 years, sources are saying that Paramount asked Disney for a one-time payment as compensation for JJ being gone. I'm fascinated by the inner workings of Hollywood. Yeah. This is really unusual, right? Normally, if you have a deal with one studio, they don't let you go.
I mean, I don't necessarily think yes, you're right. Number one, I guess I shouldn't cut you off there. Yes, I don't think it's abnormal. I think this is one of the ones on the big thing, the big stage.
Yeah.
I just keep hearing the story, like, the Empire will compensate you if he dies.
Yeah. I think what's unique about it is that he is appreciated and valued as a writer, a director, and a producer. So he is a triple threat. So they've been getting their money out of him as a producer.
Right.
So it's not like it's not like he's just kicking back and doing nothing. He's been producing movies that have been making money.
Yeah, like Cloverfield. I think there's a new one coming out next year. So. Yeah.
So I can see why they would be annoyed, but I can also see like his stock went up after he made one of the, you know, biggest hit movies of all time with Force Awakens. So they're really in a sort of, well, what are we going to do? Complain that he's going to go and raise his value even more?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, you're right. That's very smart from their point. If they calm down enough to be like, all right, as far as the fee, I guess that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the, without a doubt, the contracts where you go make our crappy movie and then we'll let you make your art house movie. That stuff happens. So I guess I'm not surprised by that, though, the inner workings of the drama. It was interesting. But what's JJ going to do, you know?
Yeah,
to go back to this franchise.
Well, and he could have been directing at any point. He could have had a project lined up. He's been doing producer work, and maybe it's just because he's taking a break, or was he waiting for the call?
Was he
secretly waiting
for
some
big plan
for Colin Trevorrow to stumble?
JJ.
JJ. I guess I'll take up the mantle.
Did someone call my name? He slinks into the room. That's what I would like to imagine.
Oh, the director drama.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'd eat that stuff up.
So, exciting news. Jon Hamm has been cast as Boba Fett from a certain point of view.
You are killing it, Jennifer.
I'm sorry. I think I'm loopy. Which is also the name of the audiobook where Jon Hamm will be voicing that infamous bounty hunter. The audio version of the new Star Wars anthology book is packed with celebrity voices like Neil Patrick Harris, Janina Gavankar, and Ashley Eckstein. The book itself will feature 40 stories, including Alexander Freed's Mon Mothma story, a Tarkin story from Pablo Hidalgo, a Worth the Bartender tale from Chuck Wendig, and a Brea Organa tale by Madeline Rue. So the book will be out in October. The question is, will you both be reading this one?
Well, I already read a part of it. I got an advance copy that I think they're really just expecting this one to be like, it's a good entry level book, I think, for people who just like, I like Star Wars a lot, but I haven't gotten to the books. If you know the basic story of the original Star Wars movie, I think you're going to be able to pick this up and read any of these very short stories.
Mm. And they're very short, at least the one you read.
Yeah, the one I just flipped through because I knew it just came I knew we were going to talk about Boba Fett, and I've been really curious about that story. It's 3 pages. So I just read it really, really quickly. So I think some of them are going to be very, very short. And it was very much, just like the book suggests, a perspective on A New Hope.
Right.
Ah, I see.
Right. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely going to read it. My advanced copy got lost in the mail. I'm still trying to figure it out. But I think I'm excited because there's so many characters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're really thinking big and wide. And I was expecting smaller characters, but they're going for the gusto with some of these.
They got some big names and some really, you know, there's one about just the stormtrooper who bumped his head.
Yeah.
You know, but they've got some big name characters like Tarkin and everything too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was surprising. I want to listen to the audiobook just for the performances.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ham is Fett. Interesting.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about the casting, but...
Well, I think this book is going to be... I think we're going to have to do 18 episodes on this. I think this book is going to be controversial, because it was just...
Really?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say any opinions or that, because the book isn't out, but people could tell just from, you know, they released... Del Rey released all of those little title cards
right,
mm-hmm. that introduced each story that's going to be told. And there's a tone to Boba Fett's voice, where, like, we haven't been inside his head... We haven't really heard him talk since he's a kid in the Clone Wars or right. Jumped Empire Strikes Back. And here's a perspective on what's Boba Fett's attitude. What does he talk like when he's thinking in his own head?
Right.
And I think it might be a little controversial for some fans.
Interesting.
And it'll be very interesting to hear Jon Hamm deliver it. And I haven't had a chance to look at anything else in the book. It'll be right. very interesting to see, like, are there four stories that become like the almost like Han shot first level thing for Star Wars fans? Where just like, this is a flashpoint. This right. is a thing that fans debate.
Mm.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's juicy. I don't know.
Do fans debate things?
I hope so. Otherwise, no one's listening to this podcast anymore.
I definitely am interested in the book. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
I'm excited for Jon Hamm. That should be
just
fun.
When I think I'm done reading Star Wars books, I could take a break. They put something out that I must read. Like, I have to read it.
Can I ask just a real quick question? Because I don't want to get a bunch of tweets about it that we didn't address it. How do we feel about Jon Hamm being cast as Boba Fett when, again, he started as a Maori actor in theory.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, he wasn't in, you know, the original Star Wars films, you know, voiced. But is that an issue?
You know, because it's a voice character, I feel like it's not as much of an issue. I think if he was on camera, I'd be like, no.
Okay.
That would be problematic. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, it's a fair point.
Uh-huh. It is a fair point.
Far be for me to say it's okay, it's good, but
great question.
I can live with it, but we'll see if it pops up.
Yeah, I think I just brought it up because there had been that sensitivity that I hadn't been thinking about Rex's representation.
Well, and if I think about like Cassian Andor and somebody, you know, it would portray Diego Luna's, that would just be
correct. Yeah,
I would find that problematic.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that is a great question.
If Ham could match the voice, I guess.
Oh.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's just not impersonation, but just like a, I'm doing Fett, you know what I mean? It could work. I mean, see, I go to Clone Wars, where Dee Bradley Baker does the voice.
Yeah.
See, right. And that's the thing.
He matches it. You wouldn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
But he is not. So.
Yeah.
But it bears the question.
Yeah, I don't have any answers. I just wanted to throw it out because I think it's a legitimate thing to ask. And
on camera,
good,
for sure.
Good to ask those questions.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, speaking of getting the internet going, Ron Howard got the internet a Twitter when he tweeted a photo from the Han Solo set. Sorry.
Everything's so coming up Lando tonight.
It's so good.
The photo was an entrance to a mine, and he captioned it, "Spicy." That one word got everyone online speculating that we will see the famous Kessel Run in the upcoming Han Solo film. As we know, spice in the world of Star Wars is an illicit substance that was mined at the spice mines of Kessel, and Han used to smuggle it for Jabba. So will we see Han make the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? And do we want to see it?
Well, that's the question.
That's the question.
Right. I think we have to see at least a few of the iconic things.
Yeah.
The Han Solo things.
Yeah.
I think it would be foolish to dump them all in because it would just feel like a greatest hit cassette you found in a truck stop in 1987. Just kind of sad if it's just greatest hits.
Sticks greatest hits.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, this movie might be a huge hit and you leave yourself some room.
Right.
So I think I'd be fine with the Kessel Run. But I don't need every Han Solo thing in there.
Yeah.
I come down on that side of it, too, where I did not have... When I saw Ron tweet that out, and I was like, oh, cool. And then suddenly, so you check back in at Twitter, and you're like, oh, wait, no, that wasn't cool, or people are upset. Oh, okay. Because I would expect that. I think... was it Seth Rogen tweeted out one of the news websites picked up the story and was like, is the Kessel Run going to be in this movie? And Seth Rogen tweeted back, get no shit. Like, yeah, I would expect this to be, and do it now. The question is, do we want to? And yeah, I agree with you, Joseph. I think everything we know about these characters, yeah, including Lando, is just beat for beat in here. It takes up some of the mystery. But I'm fine with the Kessel run.
Yeah. Yeah. Also could be Kessel without the run.
Yeah, no.
There you go. That's true.
I'm looking over your shoulder, right, and I, again, talking about going back to Spotlight Star Wars, I got these Jedi Academy books on the shelf now up there. I just don't know what to do with them. I kind of want to get rid of them, but I can't. And they take – there's Kessel stuff in there. And there's no racing. There's no runs. It's just Kessel and Spice.
Yeah, and the Han Solo books that I always talk about that I think they're still going to draw from, A.C. Crispin, spends a lot of time in Kessel. There's a run in there. And maybe there'll be a run in the movie.
Yeah.
I'm okay with the run.
Me too. Well, let's talk about something that is also controversial, which is, according to the #show.com, Darth Vader. Is this a spoiler? This is just a rumor. So,
it's a rumor.
Okay,
this
it's a rumor,
is a total rumor.
It's
a rumor.
It is all over the internet.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. It's confirmed, supposedly, to appear in the Han Solo film. The speculation began when Rogue One's Vader actor, Spencer Wilding, dropped out of an appearance at Fandom Fest in Kentucky because, quote, he will be filming the newest film in the Star Wars universe, which is Han Solo at the time. Now a source close to the production is saying someone was on the set, we don't know if it's Spencer, of the Han Solo film reshoots wearing Darth Vader's armor as recently as 2 weeks ago.
I like the way that's phrased. It just sounds like somebody snuck on set.
Someone.
Look, I just I do gaff tape, you know, but I'm wearing
Darth Vader's armor. So how do we feel about Darth Vader appearing in the Han Solo film?
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's harder to see him in this movie versus like Rogue One. I was like, yeah, well, absolutely.
That should be there.
Should be Rogue One.
Yes.
This one, you know, how well do they know each other? How well did they run into each other? Was Empire the first time they met? And then the comics are changing some of that. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that there's, you know, if we get a sense of what Han's reaction to the Empire is, his relationship with the Empire, it would maybe make sense for him to see this scary guy down the way. I don't think they should have a super direct interaction, and I don't think Han should see him use the Force. That would be a bummer to me. Yep. But I also just wanted to say that we are going to be talking about these kind of issues on our next episode next week about how much the Star Wars galaxy should be connected. And this, I think, is a big sort of linchpin of that, of like, do we need, do we want Vader in all the movies all the time?
Right. Yeah. Let's put a pin on this discussion.
Yeah. I'd rather have him in the Obi-Wan movie.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Amen.
This is a little bit of shoehorn.
But I can live with him in here. We'll see.
We'll see. So that does it for the news.
Well, round of applause, Jennifer. You you absolutely killed it. I love all the wordplay.
Good stuff. And I completed the Phasma book.
Nice.
Let's pause now. We're going to do Leia, Princess of Alderaan, Rebel Rising, a co-review here. We're going to get to that here in just a minute. I know, Joseph, you're third way Phasma.
I'm in it.
So this is a mini review, my take on it without getting too spoiler heavy, because Joseph needs to finish the book. and then, Jennifer, maybe we can sell you on it or sell you not.
Yeah, maybe.
So overall, I'll say this. I really, really, in the end, enjoyed it. And that's the key to this thoughts on it, is it's in the end I enjoyed it. There were times where I thought I feel as though I have to be honest. And I try not to be critical. Delilah S. Dawson's the author, and I think she did a very good job, and I want her to continue telling Star Wars stories. That's my thing up top. There were times in the middle of this book that I considered closing the book because I didn't feel I needed to read it. Now, does not mean that I don't think it was good and entertaining and gripping from page one to the end. All right? I absolutely think it was. It was a different Star Wars story, which I think begs the bigger question. And this is a discussion we have had here, Joseph and Jennifer, of could Star Wars movies not necessarily be Old Republic, but maybe they're different genres.
Right.
And could we have a horror Star Wars movie? Could we have this? I feel if you were to take out, and again, I'm going to stress, I think Delilah Dawson did a great job with the story. I did not want to put it down, even though when I thought about it. I think if you take out the names Phasma and some of the other characters, this is a great post-apocalyptic sci-fi Mad Max-like story and not a Star Wars story. But that begs the question then, like, oh, well, then that's not a bad thing.
No.
That's not a bad thing. So I think maybe it's a warning. So if Jennifer were to pick up this book, I would warn you. Don't expect TIE fighters fighting X-Wings and lightsabers and all that stuff. This is a Star Wars story unlike you've ever really read before, at least of new canon. Mm. And that in and of itself is not bad. Then I think it gets, and stuff, this is where I want my extra care for you, Joseph, it gets into some great First Order history.
Nice.
And great First Order point of view. This character of Cardinal, who is Phasma's rival within the First Order, goes through an interesting arc and says some things that make you understand. There's this, always this big thing. Yeah, we got with the Inferno Squad and the Battlefront 2 game coming out, you know, and Janina's character. We're following Iden Versio, and she's on the Empire, but we're supposed to like her. And there's these gray areas now in Star Wars. Cardinal is of that ilk, but it's an important lesson of what it means and what he believes in the First Order and how it might change as things go on. And I liked that aspect of it, too, where it was, I thought it was handled pretty well. And Phasma, you have an interesting, I think this is add some intrigue to Phasma that definitely wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth the read in the end. And I feel so guilty when I have negative thoughts of books. I didn't have a negative thought, but I was like, ha, I just came off of Leia and that explains things. And this is like, all right, it's Phasma.
Yeah.
Where's my big picture stuff? And then you do get to that. But along the way, it's a journey unlike ever I've ever read before in Star Wars.
And it's the new sandbox of the sequel era.
Yes.
So it is not as many interconnected characters popping up. It's what I've got so far. But I will say about Phasma, I'm in the same place where, like, I'm enjoying it, but it is kind of a shock to the system because it is very, very different, which is great, ultimately, because we need different. Right. I do have a friend who likes Star Wars. She's seen Star Wars. She's more into the sequel because she really likes to see women characters, so she's happy to see Rey. She's happy to see Phasma. She's like, there's a book about the tall lady, Phasma? Yeah. I'll read that.
Yeah.
My friend Joseph reads Star Wars books. I'll talk to him about it. Right. She hasn't read anything else, and she enjoyed it.
There you go.
And that's, I think, a great thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and again, to be clear, like, even when I was like, I might not finish this, I couldn't follow through with that because I was like, but I got to find out what happens next.
Yeah.
So it's entertaining in that regard. It's just we are, as, and you hear me when I talk about the comics of, well, that's not really Star Wars. And sometimes I'm an annoying, whiny fan, and other times I think it's space whales. But this is Star Wars as more sci-fi, which is, I'm always Star Wars as more fantasy, more epic. Mm. And that's, again, not a bad thing. I think you just need to go in aware of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good overall.
Yeah, I think that's excellent encapsulation of that. And maybe we'll talk about it once I finish it. Maybe we'll see how juicy it is. Maybe we'll do a larger Phasma review and get a sense from our listeners. How many of you guys want to hear about Phasma?
Phasma.
But for now, we got a great double feature.
Double feature. So Leia, Princess of Alderaan by Claudia Gray came out on Force Friday. Rebel Rising by Beth Rivas came out a little bit earlier. Joseph read Rebel Rising first and was like, dude, what are you doing not reading this? and I powered... Not powered. I mean, when I say powered, I like woof, powered through that book. So not forcefully, just like gone. The book's done.
Because
I read that.
It's so damn
good. And then Leia comes out and they're both, quote, young adult. And they're both in the same font, a little bit bigger font. Books are similar sized. So they're kind of sister books in a way. And that's why we're going to discuss them as such here. Now, I know, Jennifer, you've read Leia.
Mm-hmm, I have.
You haven't read Rebel Rising.
No.
So I apologize. We're going to get a little bit of spoilers, but...
No, that's okay.
It's the story of Jyn Erso, and you know where that story goes.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think that's a good thing for our listeners. Yeah. This is going to be a spoilers discussion.
Yes.
Full spoilers.
Absolutely. Make no mistake.
So we want to start with a slight review of basically just a summary, a very basic summary of both of the books, because a lot of listeners have asked for that on our book review episode. So for Leia... This is really the story of her getting involved in the rebellion. Mm-hmm. It is structured as she has to pass these three challenges in order to begin her ascension to become the queen someday, mm-hmm. not just the princess of Alderaan, to become the queen of Alderaan. So we follow her adventures as she goes through these three different challenges, and she slowly learns about the full reality that the rebellion exists. And by the end of the book, it's basically that she has made all the connections that she needs with her father, Bail, her mother, Brea, her rebellion aunt, Mon Mothma. She has had a romance that ended tragically where she learned some lessons. And she has come to fully accept that the reality of what a rebellion is, that it means conflict, that it means combat, and that she has been brought into the inner circle to truly start her path to be a rebel.
Yeah, and her path to being a rebel starts in a very, very different spot and a lofty, privileged spot. And it's a lesson in that and what to do with that when you're in that kind of position of power. But on the flip side is Rebel Rising, which takes place in roughly the same time, though it does start. It's weird. It starts. It leads up to Rogue One, but it starts at the beginning of Rogue One from the moment Saw Gerrera opens up that rock hideaway and takes young Jyn Erso away. It is the story of Saw Gerrera raising, mentoring, and doing his best to raise this young female, kind of almost thrust upon him as the rebellion starts to grow. And it is very much about Jyn learning to be part of this rebellion and then maybe learning to be pulling herself out of it a little bit, I think. And also, it really, really adds some depth to what Jyn is thinking, some of her loss. There's also a tragic romance in it, mm-hmm. in a way, and it works. And it also goes a lot into Saw and what his idea of a rebellion was and how it really started to differ. It asks some tough questions about what is too far? How do you consider something too far in face of great evils? And making those tough choices. And it also creates a little shared connected universe with that Rogue One time frame, the Inferno Squadron, the Inferno Squad novel, the Rogue One novelization. There's that additional chapter or additional section of the Rogue One novel by Alexander Freed in which Jyn returns to Saw and asks about names. And all those names are in this book.
Yeah. Oh.
It's all the stories of that. So if you haven't read Inferno Squad, Rebel, I would start with Rebel Rising. That I wish I had that chance before.
Yeah, because I had read Rebel Rising first, and it did make Inferno Squad even weightier because you understand exactly what the Partisans did. You understand that line in Rogue One about we don't work with him anymore. Right.
You really, really understand.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that at more, the actual event a little bit explicitly because that's a great bit of canon filled in.
And I think, too, this is why I think the companion piece is in a way. This is about joining a rebellion maybe from the bottom up.
Yeah, I think
working its way up.
Yeah. The Leia book is a story of how do you accept rebellion when you have everything and you have the responsibility of everything. And Jyn's is a tale of survival of why do I care about this rebellion when all I want to do is live, is to not die. And there's such great, there's so many similarities, but at the same time, they're like polar opposites of these two heroes who are the same age, really.
And they almost...
Very close to.
They almost connect. The timelines are so close and similar that there's just a couple years off of Wobani, where Jyn's time in prison there and Leia's time before it becomes a prison planet for the Empire or a prison center. It's interesting. It was like you were almost like, wow, we're so close.
They're almost together.
Almost together.
Yeah. And they both have also this additional level of threat of they both have to hide their identities.
Yes.
Jyn is aware that she has to hide her identity because if anybody finds out she's actually this long-lost missing daughter of Galen Erso, they'll take her to give pressure to Galen.
Right.
And Saw, that's a lot of Saw's motivation is hiding her from things. Mm-hmm. And then Leia has no idea that she has hidden identity, but we see, and we'll talk about more, the machinations of characters hiding Leia's identity. Yeah. So like another great connection point.
Right. And so Leia actually uses her identity too at certain points to her advantage, which I really enjoyed too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an overview. Let's dive on in, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think the starting point really is, I think, the characters. I wanted to start by talking about where did we learn about the characters? Because you and I have both said about Rebel Rising, which people should absolutely read.
Yes.
If for nothing else, it makes you appreciate and understand Jyn's character even better.
Right.
So on the one hand, we have a character who has plenty of canvas left to fill in with Jyn. And on the other hand, with the Leia story of like, we know the character of Leia.
Yeah.
What's she like when she's 16?
Yeah.
So I would just want to talk about who the characters are as we understand them in the book.
Yeah, and I'll start with Jyn, and then, Jyn, you can jump in with Leia and everything. I think Jyn Erso in Rogue One comes off as sometimes flat, and that's one of the critiques of the movie, even though I'm still a big fan. I just turn it on Netflix these days and just let it play in the background.
you don't get that. I don't think you get that full sense. A lot of her emotional journey comes almost, quote, out of nowhere, even the stuff with Galen. And I think what I learned about this character is how just embattled and bittered.
Yeah.
And how just a hard crust was put around this girl at such a young age. Mm. And that I think there in the center is someone who does want to care, where I thought there was that flippant moment of Rogue One of like, well, you know, it's not a problem if you don't look up. I think that's where she ends up. But it wasn't as earned in the movie as much as it is in the book, where I see this journey and you understand where she's you understand her darkness. You understand her hatred of her father and the confusion of that and not understanding. And so the father issues make more sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And the connection to her mother long gone, which we wish was more explored, obviously. But just in terms of canon, that Lyra didn't die or didn't die that soon, that early. So I think I appreciated the journey of Jin. I think maybe even more where the Leia one is. These are A+ books, by the way.
Yeah.
The Leia one, it was more of like, oh, yes, this makes sense. And they did a great job connecting this. Where Jin, I was blown away by just some of the scope of what she went through.
Yeah. I feel like with the Jin in the Rogue One movie, you can tell she's feeling a lot, but sometimes it's not entirely clear what she's feeling.
Yes.
And now when I watch the movie again, it is because of this book, because this book so attaches to specific lines. And I think it is the story of her losing hope, because every time she does try to make her life a little bit better, some battle between the Empire and the Rebellion she gets caught between them. And she remarks on that of like, anytime anybody fights, it just takes away everybody's happiness. So, so it makes sense of like her character in like Forces of Destiny. Mm. Like when people are like, I thought she was like this bitter person who didn't want to get involved. It's like, well, yeah, she wants to get involved when it's a young girl and her cat, cat or whatever Tuca, right?
Tuca.
Because she is a caring person. That's what she wants. But the world, the galaxy is too cruel for her to have it. So she gives up hope, which makes it even more powerful when she finds her way back to that hope in Rogue One.
Yeah. For you, Jen, with Leia?
Oh, Leia was such a fantastic book. I mean, I was really curious, how is she going to make this character that we know so well? Like, how is she going to make it fresh? How is she going to make sense of what Carrie Fisher did with the role from A New Hope to now with The Force Awakens? And it was amazing how I could see Carrie Fisher herself, like humor in this character. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see also like she's not just a princess in the sense of, you know, the regalness, but she's also the physicality of her, where she is not afraid to get physical or get in the mud and being physically active, which is what we see Leia become in Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
The relationship to her parents, the relationship to the young man, Keir, is that his?
Keir Dimadi, yeah.
And the relationship that she forms with him, you can see how that's planting the seeds for why she doesn't want to get involved with Han and why she kind of has this. Oh, and then the line of what her mother says about, you know, you should get with a scoundrel.
Every once in a while,
you should get with a scoundrel. Yeah, I loved that. That was a lot of fun. But it just really, it connected the dots in a way that was seamless, and it didn't feel like, okay, here's how we're going to connect the dots, and this is how it's going to connect to the canon, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it was just a beautiful story.
That was the biggest question I had going into it, and probably the biggest challenge for Claudia Gray as an author, which obviously I didn't have fear that she wouldn't pull this off. But I think if you're choosing the author to do this, she's understood Leia so well. And the other thing, she's Bloodlines, though she does make that Lost Stars appearance, it isn't just a checkbox of things that you come to know about Leia. It is the... Like, it all makes sense that this is this young teenage girl who just in a couple years is now part of the Senate and leading rebellions. And it makes complete sense. And all the lessons start to, you know, to add up. And I thought that was so, so nicely done.
Yeah, I thought that she did. Yeah, like she did in Bloodline, but from a much younger perspective, really sort of locking down these points of what makes Leia Leia, that she has a sense of humor. Not that she has some script writers or was played by an actor who has a sense of humor. Like, those things are true. Yeah. But it is a truth of the character that she has a sense of humor, and she uses it in her own mind. She uses it to disarm people, that she has a huge sense of duty and responsibility and kind of like Jen, but nowhere near as harsh, keeps learning in different ways that I can only have so much so many things for me. Mm. I can only have so many times that I'm vulnerable,
right,
because otherwise I will be letting other people down. And I thought she laid the groundwork for that, which comes back in the whole sequel era,
right,
and Bloodline. Yeah. Is such a huge deal, but
it's really strongly connected to Force Awakens sequel era almost more than the original trilogy.
Yeah,
the connections are there. The original trilogy, but I thought this really connects to Bloodlines and Force Awakens, and probably what we'll see in Last Jedi.
I mean, it is literally like Journey to the Last Jedi. Yeah, we'll talk more about that. But the other character thing I wanted to mention real quick about Leia that I loved is where it was so laser focused. Where I believe it is Keir says, like, well, when you're presenting yourself to this young Senate group,
right,
you keep rattling off all of these impressive things and, you know, your stats, your resume, whatever, right, just say something human. And I love that the thing that Claudia Gray comes up for Leia to say is like, I like thunderstorms. Because it's kind of a young person thing to say. And it is also like that fits Leia, because like thunderstorms are like, well, they're kind of romantic and exciting, but they're conflict and there might be problems. So you kind of have to be ready. And it's like, is such a great detail if you have to just have a detail where Leia has to let down her guards, like, what's something you like?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so much better than her just saying, like, animals. You know? It's like thunderstorms.
Yeah, I love that. And the final thought for me on Jyn, too, is I came out of this book feeling really sorry for Jyn Erso.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The life she was dealt. Like, and how, you know, almost like if I wish she could have survived the events of Rogue One to reap some of the benefits of what she did and maybe have a less tormented life. Because she's not this brooding, tormented emo kid. She's gone through these horrible things. And poor Saw. I feel sorry for Saw, too. Because I think he really did care for her. And but right from the get-go, you see Saw's focus is on this rebellion. And it was just a bad situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a little bit of character stuff. I want to talk a little bit about kind of what their relationship with the Rebellion means.
Yeah.
Because that's, I think, one of the really obvious things that connects these two books is they're both struggling to become or go away from the Rebellion. And it feels like we are starting in the whole Star Wars storytelling world to start to tie the bow on this era of Star Wars storytelling.
Yeah.
Because Rebels is also coming to an end.
Yep. Mm.
And Rebels is all about, you know, the building up to accepting full-on, full-scale rebellion war.
Right.
And both of these books are walking up to war.
Yeah.
And the war wouldn't be possible without either of these two women.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and because we grew up where, you know, the Rebels were the good guys, Star Wars, Imperials are the bad guys, and though that's still generally true, I think what I love so much about this era that these stories are focused in is it's starting to really, that's why I appreciate that scene in Rogue One more, where all of them are debating and some of them still want to keep in the Imperial Senate and Radis wants to go fight. And it's like you see a lot of this at play. And for me, it's interesting to watch the noble intentions of, say, someone like Leia and some of her people. And see some of the how you still have to play the game and why it wasn't just grab your guns and go to war and how she had to learn this frustrating lesson and pay for it early on, make some mistakes that cost people.
Right.
And then you have her father and mother who have not opposing views but different takes on how to get there, and maybe Breha coming to a point of war sooner than Bail, and that stuff was really interesting.
Yeah. Jennifer, I wanted to ask you, I feel like one of the overall themes of Leia is even people who know that inevitably they must fight because to be silent is to be defeated.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the people around her can't accept it because they might lose people.
Right.
That's where Bail is hung up of like, I can't let you into this rebellion, Leia, because you're going to die. Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what happens with her tragic love story with Keir.
Right.
Is Keir is putting Alderaan first above the rest of the galaxy and does this very, you know, bizarre, brave thing to protect Alderaan. But it's ultimately kind of, we know, wrong because it's just basically trying to secede from reality, from the galaxy. And I think a lot of it is about coming to accept that, well, war means risking people you love. What did you think about all that?
I thought it was really fantastic. It's one of the questions that we've talked about here, which is, you know, if the Jedi use violence, or how are they justified, whereas the Sith are not, you know, yeah. Right? And then Mon Mothma talked about that, where she said there comes a time when refusing to stop violence can no longer be called non-violence. Mm. Basically, at some point, you have to stop being a bystander.
Yeah.
That was really powerful, and it was a great lesson to understand, like, why it's important to fight and to take. You have to take action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you have to be selfless, which is really what we see Leia becoming, you know, and she, even with the relationship with her parents, where she wants to have her parents' time.
Yeah.
You know, and by the end, she understands, and even Amy Lynn Holdo talks mm-hmm. about the importance of being able to separate from your parents and how you can mm-hmm. lead your own independent life. And we actually see Leia going through that journey and becoming an independent woman and becoming a selfless leader, which is what we see now, obviously, with the sequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I thought it was excellent and answered that question that I've wrestled with.
And being willing, you talk about being willing to lose some of the people you love, and I think Jyn's part of her lesson is she's already lost people she's loved.
Yeah. Mm.
And then gains at one point kind of a new family mm-hmm. and then loses them, and maybe some of her actions could be related to that, and that kind of puts her in a spot of F it.
Yeah.
Right.
No more. And how far are you willing to go in that regard, you know?
Yeah.
Which might be a question Leia's asking herself now, you know, with Han gone. You know what I mean? It still could factor in. I thought, so the Jyn represented that kind of thing. Where,
yeah.
You know, how far are you willing to, how much are you willing to lose?
Yeah. And I think the book, Rebel Rising, does a great job of sort of pointing, so the book feels complete, pointing her in that direction. Because it actually goes into a couple of first scenes of Rogue One.
Yes.
But it gives the movie more power because Leia has more privilege. She mm-hmm. has resources. Yeah. She has a family around her. So she can get to that same place without... she certainly goes through things.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that Jyn's whole story is having to accept that lesson that you just read of Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of, like, you can't do nothing.
Yeah.
Because that's... I mean, it's told so well of, like, with Jyn actually saying, like, anytime there's the Empire near, or the damn rebellion, or the partisans, yes. there will be violence, and people will die, and it will probably be people I love. They'll die, or they'll be taken away.
Yeah.
So, all violence is bad. I don't want to have anything to do with anyone. I just want to hide in a corner. Yeah. And it's such great storytelling that the galaxy reality keeps coming for her.
Yeah.
And even though she's been through all this tragedy, she also has to eventually say, all right, because of who I am, because of who my father is,
yeah.
the baton has been handed to me.
Literally.
And I can't not take it.
Yeah, and it goes to her rescue scene in Rogue One was always that. Remember, it was a kind of a point of critique.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, why is she fighting the rebel? She punched the rebel guy with the shovel. What does that mean? And it's like, you know, the novelization of Rogue One does a great job, and then this expands upon it where she has a hatred for the rebels as well, because you're right, they've killed two, and she's seen them, and it's affected her, and then she's been part of that, so she really does. That is a case. It's in the Rogue One novel, it's expressively stated that she's like, oh, God, Sauce found me, and I don't want part of this. And this one's touch upon just the rebels herself. She's got problems with the rebels just as much as Imperials, and it's an interesting take on the rebellion and how you could see they're not cohesive.
Oh yeah.
You know, right, and Draven and all those guys, and there's different point of views, and how, you know, we even see that, you can see that in real life, different ways of going about to reach a shared goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the people who in a little bit in Rebel Rising, but certainly in Leia, I mean, my favorite Weasley Senator Noor Jabel is referenced. He's not even referenced by name. They just say the finance minister from Euter. And they're like, it's that weasel.
Yeah.
And he's still trying to get out of actually doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Isn't it Leia or Amy Lynn that notes, like, how, or was it Kira, that notes how ineffective, they're like, well, how are they going to get anything done? There's constant infighting when these group of people come together.
Yeah, you really, this ragtag rebel crew really is present in both of these, mm-hmm. you know, but definitely from the deep inside view with the Leia novel, you really see You know, the you understand Rogue One even more.
Yeah, right. And there's really passing references to, like, well, there's some cells out there. So then you even get the acknowledgement of, like, oh, that's what Rebels is. It's that one little cell, mostly around Lothal, kind of kicking ass and taking names, while the rich people are still debating.
Still debating. Still debating. There's a constant theme here of strained parental relationships and also secondary parents and finding new families, which I mentioned happens in the Jyn thing. So it's also the first real quality time we've ever spent with Leia's adoptive mother.
Yeah.
Which I thought was special and interesting and so needed.
Yeah.
You know? I loved that. It just was so real. I thought, boy, if I was a teenager reading this book, you could just really connect with that, where sometimes you feel like your parents are off busy doing their own things and I just want my time, and that struggle. And really seeing the marriage between Bail and Brea was interesting as well. And how strong Brea is. And again, this really makes me want to see this brought onto the big screen.
Yeah.
While Jimmy Smith's, he still looks young. Come on.
He does.
Let's bring him back. But it was a very, very real. And how Leia turns to Mon Mothma as, like, that, that family friend or that aunt that some of us might have, where it's like, well, I can talk to you. But even Mon Mothma schools her a couple times, where she's like, no, I'm going to tell your parents what you did. Sorry, kid.
But schools her in a great, responsible way. Exactly. And I love this idea that Monk is, their connection goes deep and long into the Star Wars story, up into Bloodlines. And, we don't quite know what happened to Mon yet, right?
She retired, we don't know anything beyond that.
But you see early on, it's Leia goes through this. Again, she is 15 going on 16 at the beginning of this book, but there is definitely she gets some treatment that, she looked down upon. Some of it is just good-natured. Ramis and Tilly's is like, I remember when you were one, little girl, we were on a space mission. And so she has to earn that respect, but also the frustration of knowing that people aren't taking her serious because she's a girl, because she's young. But Mon comes along, gives her the respect, but also becomes this leader. And so you see that relationship form early on, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Claudia Gray did something special with Brea, too, with the pulmonodes.
I was just thinking that was interesting.
Yeah, the artificial organs that kind of glowed, which was a cool image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Claudia Gray was also saying on Twitter, when somebody was asking her directly about this, that she was just like, as we've talked about a lot on this podcast, that losing a part of your body has always been a sign of you are losing your humanity.
Right, in
Star Wars, right up to Kylo Ren's scar on his face.
That's moving
and she's
still.
Just like, I wanted to put something in that was like, hey, if you lose a part of your body, you're not automatically evil.
Yeah.
And like, it's cool. It works. Nothing better than that shot in Return of the Jedi where Luke looks at his mechanical hand and realizes what's happening and would never want to take that away, but it's cool to add some balance to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a great moment of towards the end of they go to the place of that accident.
Yeah.
And
they pass it, and it was a little bit of her adoptive mother and her mother essentially basically saying, acknowledging that Leia's going past her and exceeding her. And I think every parent will look at a child and, like, want them to do better. And I think, I don't know, I interpret a little bit of that moment of just like her, like, yep, that's where it happened. Let's go to the top. And you're not hurt. You're not injured. You're going to be the queen.
And it's the reason that they wanted to adopt.
Exactly.
Yes.
Which I was just going
to
say.
Gives such strength to the adoption story.
And the thing that I loved is seeing their love, their true unconditional love for Leia. It was like biological parents. I mean, there was no love lost there, which is really, really beautiful. And something I'd always kind of wondered about.
Yeah.
I was like, what about Leia's home like with life? Well, this explains it.
Yeah.
And she had a pretty darn great... I loved the visuals of, her privilege, being able to go out on the terrace, enjoy some green juice, having a nice breakfast, some tea. But then, always reality would snap her out of it, where it's like her father wouldn't show up or, he was cold to her because he was so busy thinking about the rebellion and what they were planning. And so even though she was privileged, she was still experiencing.
And, like, the droid micromanaging her to do her hair and her gowns and that, like, and to remind you, like, yes, she has privilege, but she also has responsibility as a part of that privilege.
And I like, too, the lessons that Leia had to learn, too, on how, even if you decide to use that power and privilege, the way you do it is important as well.
Yeah.
With the creatures that at first were like, we don't want your help.
Oh, yeah, no, Charles Huddens.
The Charles Huddens, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And Leia had to find, it was a little bit of a strong-willed, defiant Leia, but also a Leia of like, let me see how, that's right, I have to understand, I can't just be like, you want some money? Here's some money, I got your money.
Right.
There's a pride to these people, too, that you can't just come swinging in with your spaceship in your white gown, and I thought that was a valuable lesson, too, that I'm sure Leia learns the diplomacy of help
yeah.
and assistance that is important as well, and that certainly carries on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yeah. So I want to talk just a little bit about Saw in Rebel Rising, because he is sort of the counterpoint to Bail and Bray are awesome, and the conflict is they're not spending enough time with Leia at the beginning of the book. And then Saw is just like, he's kind of almost sitcom dad. Like, it's almost fun when he, funny.
Yeah.
I mean, besides Jyn's horrible pain, when he brings her home, he's like, here's your room.
Yeah.
I know nothing about children. I know nothing about women. I'm sure you will figure it all out. Here is where the knives are.
It's like Punky Brewster.
Yeah. It's great. It makes you realize that
Punky
moment gives the humanity to both Jyn and Saw immediately and hooks you at the beginning of the book. Because Saw is like, I've always told them I would come for you. And it's clearly, I'll come for you as a warrior and I'll train you. And there's great training montages where he teaches her to shoot and beat broken old droids.
Mm.
But in terms of like emotion, what to wear?
Is it
like he's got nothing? He's just sort of like, I don't know what to do with you.
The character Idressa, is that the name? I'm trying to dig it up.
Oh, yeah, there's
is a female character that Saw kind of comes around and is kind of like, you mind going into Jyn's room and teaching her some things about lady stuff? Like, it's essentially that.
No, lady. I don't know, lady.
It was sweet. Yeah, and so it's a dairy because I feel sorry for Saw, too. And the character of Saw has just continued to get better and deeper to me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, looking at Rogue One, where Forrest Whitaker, a lot of people, the casual fan, were like, he's crazy and he's got hair and he's making weird sounds. And why didn't he run? He should have died. Like, his death in Rogue One now has even more weight and meaning to me if you go back to Clone Wars Season 5 and this book.
Yeah.
You understand him. You get him. I'm so curious now in Rebels what we're going to see with him now.
Yeah.
And two tubes in there as well.
I want to take him close to the line of where he is in Rogue One.
Yeah.
But there's so much great stuff there. Do you want to get in a little bit, some of the kind of the big connection moments?
Yeah, a lot of big connections, a lot of good stuff, and let's start diving through that. The first, the big one, and this is in the Leia novel, and it's for prequelists like us. It is a great moment. Moff Korsh Panaka and the Skywalker reveal. This is, of course, Captain Panaka, Padme's personal captain of security from The Phantom Menace. The actor did not carry on into the other movies for some things came up, and so they rewrote the character as Captain Typho. But we always knew, and you followed legends that became canon, and it was even canon, that Panaka, who was Padme's number two, man, he was one of the good guys.
Yeah.
He went on and worked for the Empire.
Yeah, that was shocking.
And it was never really addressed. And now we get to see what that was, what that meant, and he retained a lot of who he was.
Oh, absolutely. And it works so well because Palpatine is from Naboo, and Palpatine has always been good to him. So he has that sort of like, I'm loyal to this person who I don't understand is actually, a teeth-rotting, wrinkled Sith nightmare of a person. He's the senator from back in the day who's always been good to me. And if I stay here and I'm the Moff of Naboo, maybe I can do some good.
Yeah.
So, again, that very tortured presence.
Yeah.
But then the fact that he starts to figure out that Leia might be the child of Padme.
Yeah.
And Anakin.
Yeah.
I 100% think he got it, figured it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they handled it so well with, I believe, either Idrio or Benthic Two Tubes taking him out with his explosion.
Yeah, because it was a Tognath with a mask, right?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, right.
It was. So
and that's what Idrio Two Tubes is.
Yeah, I believe we got ourselves an egg mate.
And it was, so who knows? Maybe it's a third one. It's Thraxor or whoever the third one is, if there's a third one.
Yeah.
But it was, I think, great writing to be like, let audiences, readers fill things in without us yeah. figuring everything out. Because we were seeing it from Leia's perspective, but like especially if you've already read Rebel Rising, you're like, that's a partisan.
Yeah.
We know how the partisans work.
Right.
We know that horrific violence is coming. And yeah. that was a great way to like tie all those ideas together too, because then we had just learned that Moff Panaka's not that bad of a guy.
Right.
But no. from the partisan perspective, hit Palpatine where it hurts on his home planet.
Yeah.
That guy's got to go.
That guy's got to go. And that is the theme in Rebel Rising, like, how far do you go with that? And then you see the cost of that, which yeah. is why Mothma and Bail and all these guys are like, damn, Saw Gerrera and the partisans. This was a loss
right.
because Panaka was someone they could have turned, they could have got to. And I'll tell you, and then one of the strengths of this book, Leia, because there's a lot of fighting and action and spaceships and violence and Rebel Rising, great stuff.
Yeah.
Leia doesn't have a lot of that.
Just a little bit.
But it has amazing amounts of tension.
Yes.
Claudia Gray nails some of these scenes with and Panaka. The moment where he's like, well, when'd you say you were adopted?
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
What year was that?
yeah.
What dress are you wearing? You look, because she's in Padme's dress.
She's in Padme's dress, yeah, because she was yeah. visiting on Naboo. And it is so cathartic for somebody to finally say,
yeah.
hey, you know, you look a lot like Padme
right.
as a Star Wars right. fan. But I think that I've talked to Ken about this. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to hear from you, Jennifer. Like a huge nerd chill moment for me is obviously Panaka gets blown up.
Yeah.
Possibly by two tubes.
Two tubes, yeah.
Right. And then Leia's back and reporting these events. And Bray has that moment where he's like, how much time between when he said asked about your adoption and when he died was there?
Right. Yeah.
And just like the whole weight of like, did he tell someone you are a Skywalker in right. those 30 seconds? Yes.
Oh, yeah. It was so, there were so many moments where I found myself going like holding my breath and oh my gosh, I can't believe yeah. that happened. And that was one of those moments. And that's what's so great about Claudia Gray. Like we were saying, connecting the dots in a way that is so exciting. It doesn't feel shoehorned. It's like, oh, okay. I know this guy. Okay, great. Oh my gosh. He's figured this out. Like, oh, yeah. It was just such an, so gratifying yes. as a fan to finally. Yeah. And then also the flip side, which is, well, I like the partisans. Yeah. Oh, but they just did something very bad. It's yeah. wrestling with that I am enjoying. I don't know whose side I'm on anymore.
Well, and in Rebel Rising, our next big thing here, Joseph, yeah. is there's a nothing short of a brutal, gruesome attack by the partisans.
Yeah.
Oh.
The thing. And it's really nice to have it locked into canon. Like, yeah. that's the thing that's too much Saw.
Yeah.
Oh, what is
yeah.
it?
It is this attack on Inusagi.
Inusagi, I think?
Inusagi is a location, and it takes the lives of innocents,
oh.
essentially, along with hard targets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So they have these FC-1 flechette launchers. They're called these like really brutal weapons that are basically yeah. just like fire Star Wars versions of like a bunch of cutting razors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like real shotgun. You can't be discriminate. And Jin is, they're supposed to be doing like this espionage to get on the planet to take out this high value target.
Right.
And Jin is just starting to be happy that, oh, great, I can go on these missions. I can do the thing that Saw has trained me to do, but getting a little queasy about what exactly happens because she's never really taken in the room where the violence really happens.
Yeah.
She ends up in the room. It's this ceremony. They're trying to assassinate, an Imperial. Mm-hmm. During this like cultural ceremony where they've just launched a bunch of flower petals in the air mm-hmm. and they're like flying down and there are pools and there are all these people in their fine robes. And then a bunch of partisans just bust in and just fire off the most brutal weapons and yeah. shred the flowers. So it's like, it's horrible. And it's yeah. really poetically written for her to just see like, that is a picture of violence.
Right.
Just pure unadulterated, horrific violence and indiscriminate because a bunch of people who are totally innocent get shredded.
Yeah, and then it ties a little bit to Inferno Squad too, where the Dreamers, who are the follow-ups to the Partisans, do something similar or potentially do something similar to take out children, and that's where you see some of the what is what.
Yeah, you and know? You see like the Inferno Squad being like, no, anybody associated with the Partisans need to die.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, okay, great. And now I see that from a certain point of view. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so complicated.
It is dark and it is big, and you start to really get a realistic. So I love it. It's this realistic take of what the rebellion actually was and what it meant and what how people came to that. There's a lot of connections with what you're calling, Joseph, the Claudiaverse.
Yeah, the Claudia Grayverse.
Claudia Grayverse.
Yeah.
And there's some amazing ones. There's the keepsake box we'll talk about, but run through. You got this great list here you've put together of what is cross-referenced in other Claudia books.
So the planet Galanta, I believe, was introduced in Bloodline. That is one where Amelin Holdo, who we will talk about, is from. But that is also where the characters from Bloodline, Joff Seastriker, my favorite name, is from. He is a young man from Galanta and a senator that spends a bunch of time in Bloodline being partners with Leia Tarlin is also from Galanta, so they're all connected. There's this planet called Parmoth where there's, you know, hot-blooded racers. That's where Han ends up doing a lot of racing. I believe that's where Corsella is from.
Mm,
yeah.
Right.
And that gets referenced in Leia. Leia, actually, in Lost Stars, there's a description of Thane going to the
Imperial Ball,
the Imperial Ball, which is in the old Jedi Temple.
Yep.
And seeing the beautiful Princess of Alderaan recognizes her and sees her dancing.
Yep.
And that scene, we don't get any description of Thane, but we see that moment in Leia, so we know that that is
that's the
moment, because Leia specifically says that I've never done this before. I've never gone to a ball. the Imperial ball before. Jellicon gets mentioned in Rebel Rising, which is the planet from Lost Stars.
Mm-hmm.
The Bloodburn disease gets mentioned in Rebel Rising, and that is from Bloodline as well. So it all just really... Well, Bonnie is in both of these books. So just not only the Claudia Grayverse, which she's definitely taking care of business.
Beth Revis is putting it in there too.
But they're all very connected. But yeah, no, the Claudia Grayverse in Leia, she without like patting herself on the back, there's a lot of really nice connections.
Absolutely, and I should be remiss if I didn't mention Harloff Minor shows up.
Oh, of
again.
Course, yes.
There's the Wobani is interesting because that when you put them back together. The Leia one first, which kind of kicks off the novel, and then you go to Rebel Rising. Wobani, of course, we see in Rogue One. That's where Jyn is imprisoned and captured. Then you see what the Empire does to planets.
Mm.
You see how they drain the resources, and they mess with things going, and they just drain these planets in a lot of different ways, and it ends up as this drab, dark, horrible prison planet. And you see how that happens. You see.
Yeah. Wow. You see Leia try to stop it. And I believe there's an implication in Rebel Rising that what Jyn is doing on Wobani is building doors for the Death Star.
Yes.
And that the continuing thread through all of the books in this era where everybody knows, like, there's something going on. Because the Empire keeps taking resources. And they're making me make... Who would want a door this shape?
Yeah.
What surface would you need that for?
Yeah.
And it's always like, Death Star, they're building the Death Star.
And Saw's obsessed with it and obsessed with Galen and that. R2-D2 and C-3PO make a very low-key appearance in the Leia book. And Jennifer, we talk about, we're going to talk next week about this connected universe, how connected should it be.
Right.
How did you feel about this?
I thought it was brilliant. When she trusted R2 and was surprised by how trustworthy he was of a droid and how he seemed very human-like or something like that. She kind of made that comment, you know, where he was thinking about it. He's like, I'll do you a favor.
Yeah.
I loved that, seeing that relationship, that trust forming early on. That was really good.
He does something sneaky for Leia, right?
He does. He like searches to find research for her.
Oh,
right?
He pulls up some data that he's not supposed to be in.
Like,
that's so R2. And I love that neither R2 or 3PO are blatantly named, are they? It's just we know them.
Yeah.
It was like she said blue and silver droid.
Yeah.
And then with 3PO.
3PO might be mentioned. I could be wrong.
Yeah, they might have used his actual name.
It's low key, which I think works very well for me.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they should be there. Because as I was reading, I was like, come on.
Yeah.
If they are Ramus Antilles droids, and she's around Ramus all the time, is she not going to bump into these droids?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. A couple other references, too. You have Krennic, Director Krennic, not mentioned by name.
Yeah.
Definitely shows up in Leia. The ship nicknamed Moa, which factors into Lost Stars. That's where Thane spent some time.
Oh, wow.
And service there is mentioned in Leia as well. And then... this moment, and I want to get your feel, both of you here, in the Leia novel, where Leia's trying to hire a freighter for some covert operations and sees a YT model freighter in the distance that looks like the owners could use some money, but it flies off before she can get to it. How'd you feel about this here?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it would have almost been too much if everything else hadn't been handled so elegantly.
Yes.
Mm. And I think when I read it, I felt like it's a great moment in the book, so it's powerful. So it feels like appropriate for the theme of destiny in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Of like, it was almost like the Force saying, not yet.
Not yet.
Your boyfriend they have now needs to die.
Yeah.
Before you can move
and
on.
Then you'll be ready for a scoundrel.
You'll be that scoundrel. Yeah, I think it was handled. It was definitely cute.
Yeah.
And look, I'll say Lost Stars has some moments where I'm like, oh, and they were there as well. Oh, yes. Yeah. I love the book, obviously, but this was almost that. If she had seen the shape of a tall, hairy creature standing next to a man in a vest, I would have said it was just too far. But other than this, it was kind of pitch perfect.
Yeah, because she's looking for exactly what the Falcon is.
Yes. Right. Yes. It was one of those moments where I was like, oh, no, no. Okay, all right.
Yeah. And then in Rebel Rising, Jen has some mystery time in the Noat system, which is a great connection there to Star Wars. And then Takadana, which we don't really, go into. So it opens up some possible Forces of Destiny adventures in my mind.
Yeah. Ooh. I thought that was a great shout out that she has mystery time, that they give her a nice chunk of storytelling time.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And then specifically call it the Anoat system from Empire. Yeah. But then I think they say she spent a year
on
Takadana. So that one almost more felt like coming soon, nerds.
Forces of
Jin's adventures on Takadana. Yeah, maybe.
With Maz Kanata.
Yeah.
And then there's this big connection. And if you haven't read Bloodlines, this is a spoiler to Bloodlines, feel free to pause out here for a second. But if you read Bloodlines, we want to proceed. In Bloodline, there is something with that connects deeply and important to this keepsake box that Princess Leia had at one point that is brought forth again that contains the information about from Bail Organa about her father.
Mm.
Right? If I'm remembering that completely right.
Yes, Alderaanian tradition young women have this keepsake box.
Right. And in Bloodline, when the character, I forget the name, right? It's the other senator from...
Yeah, Sindian. I mean, there's so many names. I think it's
reaching Game of Thrones.
Crass Sindian or something.
So when Sir Davos and Jorah go through this keepsake box, in Bloodline, there is a reference to a lock of hair, and you just, cool, whatever.
Mm.
It's you'd find in a keepsake box.
It's a keepsheet. Leia has memories, school stickers. Well, that keepsake box with the lock of hair, that lock of hair is Keir Domati's, her boyfriend who passes away, not getting the chance to turn the rebellion into the Empire, by the way. And when it happened, it was one of those, it's not, I wouldn't say earth-shattering and huge, but it was like, bravo.
Well played.
Yeah.
It's sticking the landing.
Yeah,
and it's also that keepsake box gets taken by Bail. At exactly the right emotional time for him to have put this hidden message that becomes basically the crux of Bloodline.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like that's exactly the right time to do it. So it's not this shady, like, when did that happen? Like, that's the perfect time for that to happen.
It really is.
She's so masterful. Yeah. I agree.
I know we're running along here, but we got important stuff to talk about with the journey to the last Jedi.
That's right. Saving the best for last,
basically.
Absolutely.
We've got two big connections here. I think we'll start with the planet one first and end with I think, the biggest one. So Krayt shows up.
Yes.
And we know Krayt's going to be in The Last Jedi because that's where the AT-MC6s are going to be facing off against the Resistance ski speeders.
Looking
forward to that. there's been some hints, I think, in the databank entries on StarWars.com. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, the Rebels used to have this place. And in fact, these ski speeders predate the Resistance and the Rebellion.
Yeah.
Mm.
They've been there a while. Well, Leia goes forging around the galaxy and ends up on this weird planet Krayt and nearly gets shot down by her father, Bail Organa, and the Rebellion is entrenched there. It is their base. I thought it was a great, fun connection that's going to add to Last Jedi.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. They do a great physical description of the planet and make it sound really interesting. And and I think it's also a little bit of a mea culpa on the journey to The Force Awakens,
mm-hmm.
that the connections to The Last Jedi in books called The Journey to The Last Jedi are going to be really prominent. this droid PZ Force. You'll see him once in the background of Force Awakens.
Exactly. Right. Jennifer, if Last Jedi rolls around and they go to Krayt and Leia says something about referencing this book, you're going to be happy.
Oh,
right?
I'm going to love it. I loved learning more about the actual terrain with the salt and the red soil. Right. That was what was so fascinating to me when we saw the teaser footage or behind the scenes footage. I loved that. So
yeah, there's that great slow motion shot in the behind the scenes footage of Last Jedi where the red clay and the salt shows up.
So
that's going to be
amazing.
Beautiful. I'm sure it's going to be a beautiful sequence, but it has it has some weight to it. And then, of course, so Vice Admiral Holdo is Laura Dern from The Last Jedi. We don't know much about that character. In fact, I was one of the people that's like, she's a double agent, I bet you. I don't think that anymore because she figures prominently in this book as Amy Lynn Holdo from Gadalenta, as you would say, right?
Yeah, yeah. Gadalenta?
Gadalenta. She is a space age Luna Lovegood.
Yes. She absolutely is.
She's got various dyed hair, always changing. She does silks and aerial arts, and she is a poet. She's a deep thinker. She is without a doubt weird and in the best possible way, and is perhaps the most important new character in Leia's life in this book, factoring in all through this book. So this has got me really excited for this character.
Oh yeah. What did you think of the character? Was she too Luna Lovegood for you? Or was it just like a nice to have that kind of weird and wispy and philosophical of a character?
I loved that. But it did make me hope that we get to see that essence with Laura Dern. I would hope so.
I hope so.
I mean, but it's also great because we learn why she has magenta colored hair and the way that she dresses and where that stems from. And also in that behind the scenes footage, when we see Amy Lynn greeting General Leia, and she has this look of like an old friend, like she's greeting an old friend. I loved their relationship. I'm only concerned that we're not going to get very much of it in The Last Jedi.
I predicted Holdo was a turncoat, and then also it's a cameo-like appearance. You know what I mean? I saw someone tweeted, I think Pablo, about that. They said, "Is Holdo just going to be a significant character or a cameo?" And then Rian Johnson responded with, "It's going to be a significant character." I'm not capturing it right. And it was a funny play on words from Rian, basically saying, "Don't worry, this character will matter." I still think screen time will be less just because the way the story flows,
right? Of course,
but this will be an important character.
Good,
not just someone she meets on the journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I thought she was like funny, hilarious, brought a lot of life to it, and was such a great counterpoint to Leia, where she came from a culture where sort of freedom, flexibility, joy.
Yeah.
Kind of really being in touch with yourself and what brings you joy and like what Leia kind of can't be.
Yeah.
That's what Holdo is.
Yeah.
So then like that's clearly a part of her culture. It's not just who she is.
Yeah.
So how much of that is she going to have retained as she gets older and has been through this? And also the fact that Leia meets her as training to be a part of the Empire.
Yes.
So does Holdo end up being with the Empire, or does she? I mean, she's pretty into the rebellion, so you would imagine that she ends up being on the side of the rebellion. Yeah. But I still think that it is possible that her character is going to be a designated survivor of the destruction of the New Republic.
Of the New Republic.
And that she is the government. So it's this old friend going like, I am one of the few in The Last Jedi coming to General Leia and saying, I'm one of the few actual members of the legitimate government alive. Here's what I think you should do.
Right.
And Leia kind of being like, thanks, old friend. No, I'm going to go blow up the First Order now. And having some headbutting there.
Love it. It was a welcome surprise to the story. I didn't necessarily think, but I loved it. It had some weight. And even if it's just a moment on screen, you have this tremendous backstory already in place.
Yeah.
That's going to add weight to that scene.
And a tremendous actor. Laura Dern just knocked it out of the park on Twin Peaks recently. Just so amazing.
I heard you like Twin Peaks.
I do a lot. And Laura Dern was real good in that.
She's great. She is so great. So that is our rundown of what's going on. We could talk and talk and talk, as you can tell, but these two books, we're going to give our final thoughts here.
Yeah.
I'm giving these A+ must-read Star Wars books.
Absolutely, and I think they complement one another. I understand a lot of people are really interested in Leia, but if you liked Rogue One, if you like this era of Star Wars storytelling about what the Rebellion is, Rebel Rising is really, really great, and it is also a fast read. It draws you in.
Mm-hmm.
My other final thought that I wanted to mention about these books is there is that great passage in Leia. Again, remembering that these are a journey to the Last Jedi.
where Leia kind of accidentally uses the Force a little bit.
We would be remiss if we didn't mention that.
You know,
is that on Felucia?
Leaves on Felucia. Her fella is almost going to fall, and she kind of leaps, and she just says that, like, I didn't think I could quite leap. I don't know how I made that leap physically, but I just really felt like in tune, and it just felt like I just had to think it, and I would do it.
Right.
Like, it's not quite as on the nose as that, but it's quite clearly. You just accidentally tapped in the Force, and there's no one around you to say, hey, keep doing that.
Hey, Force girl.
Yeah.
Right. It was such a real moment of how she would just kind of be like, huh, that was weird. Okay. Well, you know, I just kind of willed it to happen.
Some adrenaline. It's all right. Yeah.
I loved that. And that whole thing about the physical challenges kind of reminded me of the Hunger Games. And I was like, where is she going with this? But then that moment, I was like, oh, that's where she's going with this.
Yeah.
Okay. That was juicy. I liked that.
So does it raise the specter of maybe like, using the Force in Last Jedi?
Yes. I think so. Yeah.
Chances are good.
Well, something. I don't know about leaping, but
probably not.
Final thoughts, Jennifer, on these books. Leia, I know the one you read, Rebel Rising. You're going to probably try to find the time.
I will, because this book, Leia, got me so excited. It is a fast read. I can't get through Star Wars books because it always takes me so much time. But this I read in like a couple days. It's just brilliant.
Right. Brilliant. Joseph?
That is my final thought already, is just that they're great in that Force moment. Just powerful for me. Powerful.
Powerful.
I have a million other thoughts, but I am not going to say that because of time.
And we do have some questions I think we'll probably leave off to another episode. You want to do that? Or
You know what? Let's do one Patreon and one non-Patreon.
I love that. All right. Let's do that. Let's do that. Hit me.
Here we go. From non-Patreon, from Twitter, Justin Walker asks, over under 60% that Rian Johnson comes in as co-writer on episode 9?
Mm-hmm.
Fair question, Justin. I'm taking under 10%.
Oh, really?
I'm taking the under here, I should say, but I don't think it happens, no.
No, you don't?
I don't think it does.
Oh.
I think JJ and Terrio got their grips on it, and even if Johnson wants to. I wouldn't mind. I could see him consulting, but I don't think he'll ever – I don't think you'll see him as a co-writer.
I think that it might be a story buy. I think, you know, especially now that we know that Rian Johnson finished his movie.
Yeah.
He's got time to relax. I do think that they're going to ask him for thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think consultant. That's my, I don't know what the exact terminology is, over, under, but yes, consultant.
I mean, the terminology, story by is a very important credit versus not necessarily co-writer, and I would be really happy with that. But co-writer, Justin, to be specific to your question, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. And then we'll, from Patreon, we'll just take one kind of fun question from Antonio Escuccio Jr. With J.J. Abrams back to direct episode 9, will he move Kylo Ren's scar back to its original place?
I hope not, but I also would really respect him if he did.
It's kind of funny, the movie's scar. He's like, no, I want it back here.
I think it looked just fine. My answer, Antonio, is I want to see it shift throughout the film in episode 9, back and forth, to drive us mad.
I love it.
Love it. That is great. Those questions come to us, like I said, non-Patreon. That means Facebook. You can like us there on Twitter at Force Center Pod. And Patreon, where we'd love to have your support. It can be found on patreon.com/ForceCenter. Just $2 a month gets you a bonus episode of Finish the Fan Fiction we do every month. And we have goals right now. We're working towards non-generic theme music for our shows. And you guys, I know, are really going to enjoy that. So if you want to, support us there. We're also, our merchandise is available on tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And Joseph, we got a new design coming.
That's right. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I'm just going to say, you know, if you're a person like Jennifer, you would really like this shirt that we came up with.
It's so good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's going to be beautiful. It will show up very soon. Yes.
Follow Jennifer Landa at Jennifer Landa, as well as her YouTube page, right?
Yes, that's right. And be sure to check out StarWars.com in the month of October, because I will be sharing nine Star Wars DIY costumes for your kids, yourself, and your pets. Yes, I'm designing pet costumes.
Love it.
That's so awesome.
Can I wait for that, Joseph?
You guys can find me on all the social medias at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can follow my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for lots of comedy adventures. I'll have more details soon, but I'll be doing a new comedy variety show with my friend Angela M. Weber of the Double Clicks on October 21st in Los Angeles. And coming out this week is a big episode of my other podcast, Obsessed. My guest is Adam Conover from the True TV show, Ruins Everything.
I love him. He's so great.
Yeah, he's really, really, really funny, really down to earth, really awesome. But the thing he's obsessed with is the truth.
Oh, yeah.
So
wow,
it is a very
sure.
deep, very interesting, very funny conversation. So check that out. That's Obsessed Podcast on Feral Audio.
Absolutely. That is it. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack. So for Leia, Jin, and Saw, that's Force Center. We'll see you guys next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.